Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs, or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I showed Fred, but Sue did not want to look at the crime scene outside of my patio door where my cat Dash has been taking out birds. I mean, he's just doing his thing. He's being a cat, right? But my wife and daughter put the bird seed in the aftermath of the storm last week right by the door.
Yeah, see, you can't do that. You can't lure the birds into their certain death and let out the cat. That's horrible.
Well, thank you. So that's essentially what I told my wife after. I mean, we had outside of the door, we had like, you know, one of those floor mats where you can, the outdoor floor mats.
Right.
What are those things made of? They're kind of, you know, it's that furry.
C-O-I-R. Is that a thing?
Is it?
I think so.
It's weird material, right?
Yes.
It's kind of crunchy, and I don't know. Anyway, there were so many damn feathers over that thing after one of the massacres. CSI came in and decided that we had to throw the whole floor mat. Yeah, I don't have a floor mat now. And then I go out this morning, and there was
And the poor birds.
Yeah, they're secondary. Mark doesn't have a floor mat.
All right, a couple of birds. They'll be fine. The birds will be fine.
No, you just said it's a crime scene.
Yeah, he's taking them out. He's good. He's a good hunter.
Is your yard fenced in at all?
Yeah, of course.
Can you put the bird seed on the other side of the fence?
Yeah, there we go.
Fred, that would make far too much. It wouldn't matter. He'd still get on the other side of the fence. What would that matter? He'd still bring the birds to me. You know what I mean? Hmm.
So he could get on the other side of the fence.
Well, yeah, the fence has got like a little, it's like a, you know, what do you call it? He slips through the fence.
Don't feed the birds. There's the answer.
Well, my contention all along is, hey, the birds seem to be pretty fine. They're pooping all over the place even when we don't feed them. So why do we have to feed them? Oh, it's the storm. They need food. I'm like,
they don't need to die.
Okay. Yeah, that's what's happening. Yeah. We're feeding the birds and we're luring them in for a murder massacre.
I don't like it.
Sue's News is coming up here. We are also going to go out to Los Angeles where our friend Brian Ping, St. Louis native, he's an anchor at KNX Radio, has been covering these fires. We'll get the very latest on that. Cusimano coming up a little bit later as well. I had a friend of mine that exposed me to a great charity auction that I wanted to give some attention to here this afternoon. And Lacey Bells is here. She and her husband run STL Mayhem, which is a softball club. And I have some friends that are part of that club. They've organized a breast cancer benefit and raffle for a family. The drawing's coming up here in a couple of weeks. Lacey, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk. Do we have you on the air here?
Yes, excellent. I'm great. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. All right. Give me the details here, because you have a pretty good auction item here for someone who may, well, actually several of them, but one in particular for Busch Stadium. You want to highlight some of these and explain what this is all about?
Yes. We actually have a family who, the mother was recently diagnosed with breast cancer, and they have four children, and they've had to, she's had to take a little bit of leave of absence from her work. So we just thought we could help them out a little bit, because we normally don't do fundraisers. We're a very blessed team, and all of our people pay their dues. We have coaches that coach for free. So we're like, why don't we do this fundraiser? Because when you're a team, that's what you do, right? Fundraisers. So we were lucky enough to, we just kind of put out a call for things at first, and we put together six really nice bundles of just packages for moms, packages for dads, a barbecue bundle, things like that. And then we had a Cardinal suite just kind of drop in our lap, which really raised the bar for this raffle. So we have an 18-person all-inclusive suite for a game of your choice. And disclaimer, the Cardinals do have some exclusions, but that's a pretty awesome deal. Somebody can pick any game. They can take their family. They can take their team. And it's only $25 for one raffle ticket, or if you spend $100, we'll throw in an extra, so you get five raffle
tickets.
That's
the way you want to go, right?
Yeah, that is the way you want to go.
You want to get the five for $100. Don't be messing around with $25. That's insulting. All right, so we're just going to focus on the five for $100, and then where can they find all the items and make a bid? Or not a bid, but buy some raffle tickets.
Yes, you can check us out on Facebook. We're at STL Mayhem 2012-Bells. And I know that's kind of a mouthful, so hopefully you're going to link it on your site somewhere. But we are selling raffle tickets on Venmo. Gone are the days of physical tickets with the tabs that you lose. So if you Venmo us at Derek Bells, which is at DereckBelz, we will comment to confirm, and we will give you a raffle ticket number through Venmo, so it's very easy to take part in this. And then good luck to everybody on February 2nd when we do the raffle. And our girls will do it live at practice, so that will also take place on our Facebook page.
Okay, I'm going to go here, DereckBelz, right?
Yes.
$100 here. I'm going to say
raffle. And I know you're a Cards fan, so I'm assuming you're going to get on this. Yeah.
I'm doing it right now. I'm sending $100 for five raffle tickets. So
Awesome.
I'm going to say pay without confirming and hope that it's going to go to Derek. So there we go. So you guys will respond to me for doing that, or do I need to do anything else?
Yes, we will heart to confirm that we got your payment, and then we'll also comment with your raffle ticket number.
Awesome. Well, good luck with everything. And again, if you want to, I can link on our Twitter site, but you can go to I think if you search STL Mayhem, it'll come up on Facebook, right?
Yes. We have several teams, so there are several pages. STL Mayhem 2012 is the original post, but all of our teams with the different age groups will have that post as well.
Okay, Lacey, good luck with everything, okay? I think you're going to get some good response here, and keep us posted on the raffle as well.
Awesome.
Maybe I should have said it. When I win the raffle, just let me know. How about that?
Yes, exactly. And you can take me along.
Yes, we'll have how many people are in the suite?
18.
Yeah, I mean, I have like two friends, period. So I'd have to invite you and other people.
Sue, Fred, Ethan.
Right.
Thank you, Fred.
Did I say Sue, Fred, Ethan?
That's still Lacey. Like 13 people Lacey. That we need to fill the suite, Fred.
Yeah. Well, he's just giving you a foundation.
All right. Hey, Lacey, take care. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Take care. Let's do this here.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
That's a pretty good raffle, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, just the big items worth getting in on that raffle for the suite, but there's other items as well. So there you go.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. 40 years ago today in history, in 1985, this is for you, Mark, on a 130-yard hole at a golf course in Spain, one Otto Busher became the oldest person ever to hit a hole in one. Can you guess how old he was?
113. I don't know.
He was 99.
Well, I was only off by 14.
And then a guy named Harold Stilson broke that record at the age of 101 in 2001. And the current record holder is not 113, but he's 103. That's not bad.
How long was the hole?
It was 130 yards.
I mean, that's legit.
That's still
legit.
That's
legit par
that's
three, right?
Counts.
Otto Busher was my favorite golfer of all time. I love that guy. He's a beast.
I have all his fantasy cards.
Yeah, well,
have you seen his autograph?
Popular.
It's amazing.
he squiggles it. It sounds just like Sue reads it.
You know, the weird thing that I've experienced over the years with people who've gotten holes in one is that a lot of them get multiple holes in one.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
It is bizarre. So I wonder if that guy or those guys ever had another one. I had to congratulate. I was checking in. I think I mentioned this
last
week.
Like, one isn't enough at age 99.
Right. But I'm telling you, there's a pattern that exists. But I reached out to our friend Phil Kogan. I know Phil. He's the host of The Amazing Race. He lives out in California. But I also had to congratulate him. I was checking on the fires last weekend. He's fine. He did have some kids that had to be, two of his children had to be evacuated. But he got a hole in one on New Year's Day, I think it was. And he put the video up on Facebook. So I had to congratulate him on that as well.
Have you ever gotten a hole in one?
Never have. Like, the closest I came was at Belle Reve in a real crappy shot on a par three. We couldn't see where the ball went. It must have gone essentially right over the hole. And I would have taken it as a hole in one, but it was the worst shot ever, right?
You know what's cute, Fred, is that Ethan thinks that we wouldn't have heard about it endlessly.
That's
had Mark
a fair point.
Ever made a
I don't know what you're talking
one.
About.
It would have been engraved in
I
my brain.
I don't know what
you're
talking about.
Maybe at the top of his X
with
page.
A chisel in my brain.
Right. Now, this is sad. Sam Moore of the duo Sam and Dave, and we have a little bit of music from them, who had several hits in the 60s like this, Soul Man. Oh, I love it.
Obviously remade by the Blues Brothers, but look, Sam and Dave, two of the biggest soul
huge.
Influencers of a lot of music on the planet, for sure.
Coming to you on a dust road. Good loving, I got a truckload. And when you get it,
so I guess you're going to tell me that Sam Moore has passed away.
Yeah,
right?
He was 89.
I wonder what they thought, what Belushi, or what
I
he thought
too.
About Belushi's version.
I wonder about that, too.
Is Dave still alive? Do you know?
No. He passed away in a car accident in 1988. They also did Hold On, I'm Coming, and I Thank You, both songs you would know. Are you familiar with this song, Ethan?
I know this song, and I know this song because it was on a kid's show growing up on Nickelodeon, and I thought that instead of saying Soul Man, they were saying I Was So Mad. So it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I realized they're like, oh, it says Soul Man. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Let me tell you, throughout the rest of your adult life, you'll have some recognition about song lyrics like that. You'll say, wait a second, I've been singing it this way all along. But look, you. What's that?
With me, it was the Go-Go's Our Lips Are Sealed.
Yeah, you've told that.
Eyelids of Seal.
Yes, because people sing about that a lot.
That's funny.
Look, so the bottom line, though, Sam and Dave will be referenced as influences from everyone from Ted Nugent to Bruce Springsteen because they played such an important role in 1960s soul music and in the formation of rock and roll.
Yeah, they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1992. Well, the L.A. fire numbers are staggering, and they keep coming out. 24 people have been killed so far. They said 16 of those people were in the Eaton fire and 8 in the Palisades. Over 10,000 buildings have been damaged or destroyed. It's difficult to wrap your mind around that.
One of the things, you know, we can ask Brian Ping this in a couple of minutes, Sue, is watching, I watched extensive coverage over the weekend. When they were holding one of the news conferences on Saturday, when they talked about the structures, I think the police officials said when they talk about structures, it could be a home, it could be a trailer, and they even said it could be a car. Mm. So I don't know.
Oh,
so in other words, it might not be 10,000 homes. Not that it really matters.
Right.
It's enough homes, right?
Right.
And as you were saying that, they just upped it to 12,000.
They did?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It wasn't long ago that I was in Maui and saw just the damage from the wildfires there and how detrimental that was for that community. Now, obviously, separated on an island, you know, being able to get the supplies out there to be able to rebuild that quickly is a whole separate task. But I mean, when you look at just the comparison of damage, I can't even imagine what this area of California
but
looks
Ethan,
like right now.
You were there a couple months ago, and I don't remember specifically what you said about Lahaina. I mean, what does Lahaina look like? And you don't really have a point of reference either.
Lahaina, so the area in which was like really damaged by the fires, they had just finished clearing out all of the debris. So pretty much all the debris is gone. And now, you know, along the ocean, it's just these empty concrete pavements with vegetation still everywhere, but it's just these empty lots for the most part. It's a little bit of a ghost town.
Some
it's eerie.
Some of Sanibel looked like that when I was there, you know, a year and a half ago in the aftermath of the hurricane, too. It's just properties that were there and then poof, they're gone.
Yeah.
They have upped what they think the cost of these things will be to $150 billion.
I can't imagine how long it's going to take to rebuild this.
Oh, I can't either. Meanwhile, police have also been dealing with looters who are trying to steal stuff, of course. One guy they actually caught in Malibu who had come in dressed as a firefighter.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So people are now dressing up as first responders. Fortunately, they got him. They said yesterday police detained around 30 people between the two main fires combined. I looked up, and they have an app for this called, I think it's Fire Watch or Watch Fire or Fire Duty. You can Google it and find out. But they say that one of them, I think it's Palisades, was only 14% contained. I mean, we've been doing this for days.
That's the longest one.
It's just nuts.
The good news is some of the other fires have been essentially, put out. But we're going to ask Brian some of these questions because when you hear that containment number, it's
very
confusing.
What does that mean?
We're going to ask those questions coming up with Brian Ping.
Well, just to lighten things up here, we have a new survey out. The date when holiday decorations should be down is January 16th, this coming Tuesday. Do you still have... Mark, you took yours down.
Decorations are down, have been for a couple weeks. The lights outside I have yet to flip off, though.
No, that's fair. Ethan?
The lights are still going strong. How about that?
I'm hanging on to hope.
We put our last decorations away last week. Actually, it was this past weekend. But we would have had them away earlier, but the snow kind of prevented us from me being able to put some of the stuff away because we have a storage closet outside on the deck. But, there was a foot of snow out there.
That's true. Fred?
Nothing slows my wife down. It was gone midnight on Christmas Day. But, of course, was up midnight on Thanksgiving Day.
Okay.
Well, that's fair. That's a little bit of a trade-off. That was based on an average among people who said there should be a deadline. 45% of people said there shouldn't be a specific decorations down date. Survey suggests that means those people are happy to see those lights all year long, maybe flip them on when they want to. And finally, I had that neighbor that did that. The tree stood in the front window year-round, and they would just flip it on, plug it in at Christmas.
That's fun.
I don't have time to do this right now, and maybe we won't do it until tomorrow, but there's a fascinating story that I found today about this dispute. I'm trying to see where this was, where people, the big Halloween decorations with the skeletons and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, that's a thing.
In one area, they got into this dispute about how long you should have those particular, inflatables, et cetera, up in your yard, and there's like a legal dispute about it because people are fighting.
Oh, okay.
Because people had the Halloween decorations up, and they tried to convert them to Christmas decorations, and the city's like, wait a second, that's been up for like 3 months already.
I saw one of the giant skeletons dressed as Santa.
Yes, that's what they're doing. So I'll explain a little bit more about that probably tomorrow.
Hate it. Glad it's not near me.
Yes, I know, right?
And finally, in Sue's news, we have today's random fact. Oh, I love this. Sean Connery had a chance to play Gandalf in the Lord of the Rings movies, but he turned it down because he didn't understand the scripts.
That's funny.
He was even offered a piece of the back end of the movies. Now, that would have been worth at least $450 million.
Holy moly.
But he did not get it. He's Sean Connery. And that's it.
And he's still with us or not?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I would have mentioned that.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because we haven't heard from him in a long time. There you go. I thought I had some music ready to play here. Here we go. Linda Ronstadt takes us out. Brian Ping in Los Angeles is coming up next.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, they are not even close to being out of the woods with these fires in California, and the next 24 hours is really, really going to be crucial.
A particularly dangerous situation has been issued. Strongest winds from Tuesday morning until Wednesday. We strongly encourage caution and vigilance. This is the weather prediction that the National Weather Service had going into last week's event. So these conditions are significant, they are serious, and we need you to follow all orders.
That is an LA County Supervisor, Lindsay Horvath. We go back out to Los Angeles. Our friend Brian Ping, who's a St. Louis native, has been covering these fires on KNX Radio. I've been listening a lot to KNX and watching Fox 11 out there. Brian, how are you on this Monday?
I'm doing good, Mark. How are you?
Well, trying to see what the hell you guys are in store for here in the next 24 to 48 hours, because it sounds like this could be very problematic going into tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, we're waiting what's going to happen, too, because as you just played the clip there, they are anticipating winds, perhaps not as strong and as awful as they were a week ago Tuesday, but definitely in that range, about 60 to 75 mile an hour gust. And I just took a look at the map. We're already in a 30 to 50 mile an hour range, and we're not even in that particularly dangerous situation that they talked about yet.
Can you help us out with when we see these numbers about containment? And you know, I've been watching this coverage, as I indicated, relatively nonstop when I can, when I'm at the house and I'm not watching football. But when we see, for example, the Palisades fires, whatever it would be, 12% contained, it's not like we're looking at a visual on camera from a helicopter or something and we're seeing this massive fire and they're putting some of it out so we know it's a little smaller. It's different because it's kind of hopping around, you know, these areas with all the whether it's, you know, stuff that's all dried up or trees or whatever. So when the containment issue is communicated to you or even on television, what does that mean exactly? Does that make sense, Brian? Because it's a little confusing to us.
It means getting containment lines around the perimeter of the fire to where they're confident that it's not going to jump.
Ah.
But if we're dealing with 75 to 80 mile an hour wind gusts, it could very well jump that. I mean, it jumped
right.
PCH, which is, I believe, a 6 to 8 lane highway, and torched all of those poor people's homes on the coastal side. There's no brush anywhere around those. So you're confident that it will contain it under normal circumstances. One of the reasons why that containment number is still so low is that that has not been their primary focus over the last couple of days. Their primary focus has been getting some sensitive valleys full of homes and areas that are within that very large perimeter. I believe it's up to around 40 square miles at this point, to prevent against some flare-ups and hotspots. There's a place called Mandeville Canyon. We're talking rugged terrain here. This is like they're folding hills and all sorts of places where if a fire were to get in there, it could be really, really bad with homes in there. So they're focused more on the interior. Thankfully, the wind situation did calm quite a bit over the weekend to where they're not too much more worried about the fire actually spreading. But there was a point on that note, Mark, when we did have a lull in the winds, it got pretty scary getting close to places like Brentwood and Encino on the other side of the valley, because this is an area that hasn't burned in some places since the 1940s. So that's a lot of fresh fuel that's ripe to burn if it were to get there.
Yeah, so as I was watching and listening to your coverage into Friday evening, there was a lot of concern. It looked like they might close the 405. So I wake up on Saturday, I'm watching a lot of this. The winds didn't even seem to be problematic. I heard some of the descriptions that were very positive. And then all of a sudden, there was a flare-up. And then all of a sudden, a big house caught on fire. And I watched it for like 2 hours. It burned to the ground. And they were very worried about where the wind might take any debris from that. But here's the other question. You don't even have a handle on how much of this stuff, well, we don't really know where any of this started. Could be fireworks that were left over. But now you have arsons and you have people that are setting these fires, and you can't, you know, I can't help but think that as you go into the overnight tonight and tomorrow, there's going to be a bunch of people that are going to want to do stupid things and try to start fires.
Yeah, sadly, some people see this as an invitation to, if they wanted to destroy something, it's as simple as lighting a match, it would seem, and then the next property it catches on fire and the rest. But neighborhood watches are really springing to life. We've been talking with some HOAs about what they're doing and making sure that they're running patrols and making sure that suspicious looking people aren't going around and starting it. But you're seeing some videos of people that are doing this, and it just adds to the problem. They put a curfew in overnight, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. to stop looters. That's a whole other problem. So it's not just the fire. There's so much, so many more awful things that come out of something like this.
So, you know, I will say this, and I said this at the beginning of the show, Brian, watching a lot of this over the weekend, these firefighters are doing really amazing work, and there's only so much in some cases they can do. But here's the other aspect, and Sue, I don't know if you've seen some of the coverage referring to this. There's a lot of private firefighting crews out there, correct? Explain what that's all about.
Yeah, one news story that came out of that was Rick Caruso, the developer who had a property in Pacific Palisades, right in the heart of this Palisades fire event, who was able to save his property with a private firefighting source. And I think this is news to a lot of people that these things even exist. It's strange, too, because these are happening in some places where it was alleged that the taps had completely run dry, the hydrants had run out of water. And so you wonder, do these private firefighters have access to their own source, to their own reservoirs? Apparently it was enough for some of them. You know, but especially in Southern California, you can almost look at it like a lot of people have private security because they might feel that the public services are inadequate. And so if they've got the means, they're going to employ private firefighters.
So one of the other things, and I heard this on KNX when I was driving in today, there was a guy that waited 11 hours. It was a witness said a friend of hers waited 11 hours to try to see if his property had survived in the Palisades. Finally got in because he was waiting on the cops to give him approval. House was there, but it had been completely looted. So even if your house might still be standing, you might not have your property, right?
Absolutely. And that's a big reason why they instituted the curfew and sent in the state and National Guard to patrol against this kind of thing. But there are anxious enough times for all the people waiting to get in to see if their house is standing that even if it is or was, you know, damaged and can still go on, you're dealing with, you know, these people that are opportunistic getting in there and taking your stuff, and there's nobody there to patrol it. And on top of that, all the people that are still waiting, there was a long line of cars waiting to get into the Palisades yesterday, and all of a sudden they were turned away, and they were told later in the day that they won't get there until Thursday at the earliest when they restart escorts or are able to lift some evacuation zones because of this new wind event that's happening.
Man, I'll say I hope that this goes better than a lot of people think, because there is a lot of risk here in the next couple of days. And I know you know that, and the folks out there. I don't even know how you would, you know, brace for this because of the way that these winds have shifted. And even people who thought maybe that they were in somewhat safe zones have to be on edge, Brian.
At a certain point, you just have to put it in God's hands, because there's only so much preparation you can do as an individual property owner that's going to protect you against 60 to 75. That's hurricane force wind gusts we're talking about once it gets up to around, you know, 75 miles an hour. And, you know, you can do all the brush clearance you want, but you know, embers can travel for
miles.
About a mile or so at that point. I don't know if you've seen some of the video coming in of how quickly those embers were moving. On Tuesday night, it looked like, you know, the gates of hell. It was just scary. It was really, really something.
So one final topic here before I let you go, because we're following this from afar. I'm guessing in the inner workings of Los Angeles and your coverage, the blame game has been pretty intense. Friday night, it looked like Karen Bass had fired the fire chief. I guess they were in a meeting and that didn't happen. But what would you say about the blame being tossed back and forth right now?
Well, the mayor certainly doesn't look good right now, and you know, it's been talked a lot about her being in Africa when this started, even though there were high wind warnings and conditions were ripe for a fire, and we haven't had any significant rainfall since May. So she's back on her heels to begin with, and then she takes criticism from her own fire chief, which led to that meeting. In the middle of this firefight, she didn't mention Karen Bass by name, the fire chief, but did say, you know, complain about the city shorting her money, about $17 million in the budget, and saying that the city failed her. Just a really bad look all around. And you wonder who's going to, you know, survive this professionally. Some people won't. I believe there's a recall petition going around that's gaining steam for Mayor Bass, and we could very well have a recall election coming up.
All right, Brian, well, good luck with everything in the next 24 hours. I'm really concerned. I know a lot of people out there are, but these winds are so, even now, like you indicated, they don't have to get to 75 miles an hour. They're 40 or 50. That's plenty to really spread some stuff around in these very, very, you know, tinderbox conditions. Thank you, Brian Ping. Good luck tonight.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Take care. That's Brian with KNX in Los Angeles. He's, of course, a St. Louis native. I had never, had you ever heard, maybe I have, because of wildfires, but were you familiar with private
firefighters? No, I did not know that existed.
So he mentioned Caruso, who apparently saved his shopping center with private firefighters. There's not a lot of details known about that, but there was another guy by the name of Ken Wasserman who owns a real estate investment firm, and he goes on X and he goes, does anyone have access to private firefighters to protect our home? Need to act fast here. All neighbors' houses burning. We'll pay any amount. And in the New York Times, they did a story about this, and they say that a two-person private firefighting crew with a small vehicle can cost $3,000 a day. A larger crew of 20 firefighters in four fire trucks can run $10,000 a day, but they put the number of firefighters in this country that are privately employed at 45% of all firefighters.
What?
I had no idea. I mean, it makes sense with police and security, but that's interesting, isn't it?
Where do they get the water out there?
That's a very good question, but they have something called the National Wildfire Suppression Association, and that represents 300 private firefighting groups. So I think the majority of the 45%, they're not doing it in Missouri or New York or, you know, Arkansas. They're in Colorado. They're in Washington State and some of these other areas like California, which is kind of interesting.
If you have that much money out there, $10,000 is not that big a deal compared to losing your $25,000 or million-dollar house.
Exactly. We'll keep tracking those fires. We got Cusimano coming up next. I don't even quite know how to come on the air after that promo. That's quite stunning. Thank you, Kim. Appreciate that.
Could not have prepared me for that.
No, not at all.
Dang it, you guys. I didn't have my headphones on. What happened?
I believe that Kim was talking about listeners asking her, viewers, because she said when she was on television news, viewers asking her for pictures of her feet.
Yeah, that'll happen.
And then Ryan Recker said, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. No one's ever asked me for pictures of my feet.
Well, he described his feet earlier this morning, and that's why.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's got their kink. I'll just kind of leave it at that. Hey, we got Cusimano on the line with us this afternoon. A lot of sports to talk about. Hi, Frank. How are you? Happy Monday.
Good to be with you. I just saw your tweet of the Philadelphia Eagles fan treating the Packer fan so horrible. That was gross. Well,
I want to start with that because Ethan dialed me into that. Ethan, explain what I was retweeting here that Frank's referring to.
Yeah, so yesterday was in one of the wild card games. The Packers played in Philadelphia against the Eagles, and this fan, a Packers fan, had a GoPro strapped to him or something. He was recording this interaction where something good happened for the Packers, a penalty or a replay that was in their favor.
And they
Not
clapped.
A big play. Yeah,
they
so they clapped, you know,
it.
Nothing crazy, nothing obnoxious. And this fan that was behind them starts aggressively yelling at this guy's wife. And you couldn't really tell what exactly he was saying at first. But
he
then
drops the C word.
A couple of times. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it becomes this interaction between the guy, these two guys, but unnecessary.
Yeah, it's revolting, Frank. And, you know, I don't know if there's something to be done, but that guy shouldn't be allowed in an NFL stadium forever.
Yeah, and I tell you, the Packer male fan showed great restraint because if that was his wife or girlfriend, I don't know why he didn't just take a swing at the guy. That was the worst.
Unbelievable. But on the game front, you know, I think we can probably agree Saturday's NFL games not as compelling as yesterday. And that game last night was fantastic, ending with a doink.
Yeah, we had four clunkers, and then we finally had a good one Sunday night. And it's about Jane Daniels, too. That guy, I know he's not like he's a 21-year-old. He played like 60 college games. He's probably 24 by now. But the poise of him, I mean, he's one of the best rookies I've ever seen. It's just a beautiful performance. I felt bad for Tampa, but Jane Daniels is just dangerous.
He is unbelievable. And, you know, there was one time where I thought Terry McLaurin was going to catch almost an impossible play because you got to give him credit, too, for bringing down some of those catches. So they got to take the number one seed on in the Lions. What do you think about that?
Well, that's daunting.
Yeah.
But, you know, with his ability to scramble and the Lions' defense beat up, he could make it interesting. I just don't think they can win in that building this early in the Jaden Daniels reign.
So I've been talking, as you know, Frank, about the Rams for a couple of months. I felt like as they were getting healthier, they were a dangerous team. They take on Ethan sitting in here today with all this ugly purple stuff on. He's a Vikings fan.
He's Skull, baby. Skull, Frank.
Married into a Vikings family. But this has all the potential to be a really good game tonight.
Well, may I say that Ethan is a good American for wearing the purple Viking stuff today, because if you root for the Rams, you're a member of the Communist Party.
I think we can all agree on that.
About the Rams, is that they are the lowest scoring team to make the playoffs. And here's the best stat about the Vikings. They've only trailed in 21% of the downs this season. Can you imagine that? You've led 79% of every game you play. Oh, you've only trailed 21% of the time. They've been dominating with 14 wins. Sam Darnold's coming off a horrible game. I think he's going to have a bounce-back game. And believe me, Viking fans travel like few others. That stadium will be much more Minnesota than it will be the Rams.
Well, and I think it might have been more Minnesota even if they played in L.A. just because of the way, right? It's weird the way that that has happened. But they, yeah, a lot of the opposing teams have shown up on the road. Mizzou almost blew it. Well, I don't know about almost, but it got a little dicey there on Saturday against Vanderbilt. But they get their second SEC win.
Yeah, it would have been a brutal loss because even though Vandy's got a good record and they're a good team, you can't expect them to make the NCAA tournament if you lose to Vandy at home. So it turns out to be a good win. Robinson played great down the stretch. Mitchell was really good. But now their most daunting task, they're going to play at Florida on Tuesday night. And that doesn't look good, but I like what I've seen out of Mizzou. Just hold serve at home, and you're going to be in this tournament.
I think you're right about that. And the road games are going to be tough. We know that. They'll grab a couple that they're not supposed to, but we'll have to see what happens. So we are just a few days out from the winter warm-up. There's not a lot of baseball discussion here in St. Louis. What's going on with Arenado?
Nothing as of yet. I think we're kind of waiting on what Alex Bregman does. Like, if the Red Sox can't get him, do they pivot to Nolan Arenado? I'll say this. I was reading The Athletic the other day, and Jim Bowden, who's a former GM of the Reds, gave out grades for every team in Major League Baseball. And with the Cardinals, F. And that's what you get when you don't make one move. I mean, I think the Cardinals were the only team in the 30 I read that did not make one single move. It's just crazy.
And there's just no excitement whatsoever. I mean, I think we all keep hoping for maybe just something baseball-related to talk about, even if it's Arenado leaving, right?
Yeah, you're right. I think the only silver lining is this. Many of us still think that Jordan Walker can be a good player, and some of us think that Nolan Gorman can be a good player. Well, if they do move Arenado, then we're going to let these two guys get their 550 at-bats, and they won't take that annual summer trip to Memphis and mess with them. So that's the only silver lining is, hey, maybe we're going to find out if these two highly regarded players at one time can actually play, because they're going to get opportunities.
All right, Frank. Well, listen, have a great week. I'm off on Friday and on Monday, so we'll talk here in about 10 days or so, but we'll enjoy the game tonight.
Sounds good, sir. Take care.
All right. Ethan, you know, this is interesting. ESPN's got a story about the NFL game. This is pretty unprecedented, not completely, but according to research, this is only the second playoff game in NFL history not played at a home stadium, excluding Super Bowls. The other one, you know what it was? I don't think you
know. No, I don't.
1936 NFL championship game between the Packers and the former Boston Redskins. And it was played at the Polo Grounds in New York because low ticket sales at Fenway Park a few days after the game, Boston's franchise was moved to Washington.
So this is basically the first.
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah. No, it is. Well, certainly the first in the modern era, but that's hilarious that they couldn't sell enough tickets and that's why they moved it.
I'm very curious as to what the ticket situation is going to be tonight. Are they going to fill the lower bowl? There's no way that this place is packed out. I wouldn't surprise me if there is more Minnesota fans than there are LA fans, but I am going to be curious to see what that mix is.
I'd be surprised if it's jam-packed too, but then again, you don't want to put on a big show like this. The NFL doesn't want to do that with empty seats, so
right.
I think we'll enjoy the game. I think it's going to be fine.
Skull,
the Vikings
baby.
Likely to win. We're coming back with hour number 3. Hang in there.
Get more at 971talk.com.